Get in the hang of it. Mind the banisters, son.
Oh, I can't hold it, Dad.
Don't worry, son. I shifted more pianos than you've had up dinners.
Pray, Mr. Shifter. Let refreshment.
Thank you most kindly, madam. One way of shifting it.
When a good cup of tea really counts, you're right to drink Brooke Bond PG Tips. It's the tea you can really taste.
Dad, do you know the piano's on my foot?
You hum it, son. I'll play it.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Likes of Us podcast with me, your host Neil Bradley, dedicated to working class life, art, politics and culture. Okay, so it's Monday evening and you join me in Greenwich University, or the Greenwich campus of Greenwich University, and attempting once again to meet up with the Proper Blokes Club for their Monday night walk. I came here a previous time, you may have heard, on the previous podcast, and I arrived 30 minutes too late, waited an hour, and they was miles away by the time I realised what an idiot I am. So I'm just walking through the campus at Greenwich, which is very nice as the sun sets. I assume like the university is up and running now, in the same way as Goldsmiths is. So I'm a bit early, so I'm just going to go and grab a coffee somewhere. And I'm just coming past the music department, where people are whacking away at drums and picking away at big double basses, attempting jazz. I've just seen someone in the window playing a trombone, showing off. I should have brought my triangle with me, my Derry Lee, and give it a little ting ting as it went past, but that would just be showing off, or blowing my own triangle, or attempting to be the tallest poppy. So I don't know where we're going tonight. I think in previous weeks they've gone to Canary Wharf, and now just see Canary Wharf in the distance, all lit up across the Thames. Seems a long way away to me. I think I'm overdressed. I was in my garden earlier and it was fucking freezing, so I put a giant park run. I bought the old winter parker out. And now there's people walking past me in shorts. So I'm not sure if it's me or them. But I'm sure we'll find out. And no doubt at the end of the walk, they'll have to put a tinfoil blanket around me and try and revive me with some rum and some cake. But once I get underway, I'll give you more. And yeah, up the walkers. Cheers. Okay, so I just finished the walk. We're at the O2 now, and the group, a big group tonight, about 20 plus, are heading back to the Cutty's Arc. A bit dark for me along that Thames path, but really interesting, like an enjoyable evening. I'm just going through the O2 now and get a bus home, have my dinner, but I will definitely be returning for a walk with the guys in the very near future. There's a Thursday one from the Cutty's Arc, and that goes to Canada Water. That starts at 6:30, so I'll probably give that one a go as well. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I had a nice chat with a couple of guys. They told me their stories. It seems to me very similar to the stuff that we do with Open Book. So a bit like a busman's holiday for me, but I still think there is like potential there for like an expansion of what they do and what we do, some kind of partnership. So I'm looking forward to like exploring that a bit more in the future. It's good to see so many people coming along, especially now that, you know, it's getting dark and a little bit cold. But check them out on Twitter, the Proper Blokes Club, the work that they do. I'm sure you'll find it really interesting. And I'll give you more in a little while. Cheers. Okay, it's Saturday. I'm not quite in Coldblow Lane, and I've certainly not come down to cheer. I've certainly had no jelly deals, and I've certainly had no beer, but I am back in deepest, darkest Bermondsey for a Millwall match. Millwall versus Luton Town, which is a fixture that often gets referred to when anything ever happens in the world that is bad. When they show footage from 1985 of Millwall's FA Cup match at Kenilworth Road, that notorious cup match at Kenilworth Road, which, if you'd listened to the early episodes of this podcast, I explained to you the events of that evening at Kenilworth Road back in the 80s at the height of the Thatcher government on the tail end of the miners' strike. Just prior to the Wapping dispute and the Broadwater Farm estate riots. And you have to take it into, or attempt putting it into some kind of context of what actually happened that night. And, you know, the reality was, I keep referring to it, but the Bedfordshire Constabulary were routed. And not only they were routed, they were routed on the television with the BBC cameras there for all to see. And you have to remember back, that was sort of quite unusual because there wasn't this like blanket coverage of all of the football. It just so happened to be a quarter final of the FA Cup. Millwall from the third division, little old Millwall playing first division opposition in the shape of Luton Town. You have to remind yourself again, or not so much remind yourself, but remind others, younger people, that the First Division was the Premier League. Whereas today, the First Division is actually the Third Division. I'm amazed I even keep up with all the topsy-turvy world of football. But, of course, what still remains constant today is the fact that even though that fixture was nearly 40 years ago now, 36 years, it's still referred to, and it's still referred to, I always think ironically, in terms of trying to highlight the bad old days of football and showing how bad things were then, the dark old days. Now, there is a programme on the BBC at the moment, Rise of the Premier League, and it highlights one of the reasoning, or the reasons behind the formation of the Premier League, was this attempt by the footballing authorities to get away from the bad old days. And Millwall's riot, as it's now come to be known, at Luton Town, Kenilworth Road, was a perfect example of that. When I say ironically, and I do mean ironically, because it actually comes, I'm actually, you know, recording this episode in a week when the Saudi government have just taken control of Newcastle United. Which seems somewhat ironic, bearing in mind their human rights records, even though I'm not sure their human rights record is as bad as Mike Ashley's Sports Direct's human rights records, but that's an argument for another podcast. But interesting all the same, it's interesting who decides what is bad and what is not. Now, I've just come through a big phalanx, I'm assuming that's the right description, of riot police all at South Bermondsey Station. I think maybe on the police computer, when Luton Town and Millwall is mentioned, all leave is cancelled as far as the police are concerned. And that's always interesting, especially in light of the fact that that particular night at Luton Town, the police were routed because they weren't routed anywhere else. The only two places they were really routed was at Kenilworth Road that night and on the Broadwater Farmer Estate. because they certainly weren't routed during the miners' strike, and they certainly weren't routed during the Wapping dispute. Thatcher made certain of that, even though it's emerged since that the police used sort of like paramilitary style tactics and unlawful tactics in their treatment of striking miners, flying pickets at the Algreave coking plant when Arthur Scargill was arrested, along with hundreds and hundreds of other miners, and more importantly, were beaten by the mass ranks of the British police force on that occasion. And it was interesting how the government accepted all of the facts, but have still refused to date to have a public inquiry into the policing of certainly the Algreave picket and like the policing of the miners' strike in general. I mean, I'd love to see a public inquiry into the policing of the Wapping dispute, because people forget the fact that not only did the Murdoch plant instill razor wire, which was banned in this country and was banned everywhere and was condemned because it was used in South Africa, and we're talking about apartheid South Africa, the police also used a red dye canisters which they sprayed indiscriminately over pickets so that they could identify them at a later date. You know, people going back to their cars or returning to the stations after a night's picket duty, and then they were arrested for disturbances. The very fact that they had a water cannon on standby, which they brought in from Northern Ireland at the height of the Troubles. All of this stuff has been overlooked or suppressed. The fact that they used the police horses just like the Tsar of Russia did in Dr. Zhivago, as my dad always refers to it. So, yeah, I think it's interesting. It's interesting how when this fixture comes up, you know, the police are completely paranoid, even though it was, as I say, over 35 years ago now. And the fact that it still gets referred to now, footage is still shown whenever something bad happens, certainly in football terms. So I doubt if there'll be the same scenes today, but if there were to be, it might, right, mate, how are you? It might liven it up a little bit, because there's no doubt about it, the den definitely needs livening up, because it's the most boring period of football I've ever known. But I'm just approaching the ground now, and I'll give you more in a little while. Cheers. Join me the morning after the day before on a nice walk with Travis Bickle about 8:30 in the morning. A damp, quiet Sunday. I'm not going to talk about too much about what happened yesterday, just because of the fact that it was dire and awful, and the sooner Mill get rid, and everybody knows what I mean by that, the better for all of us, despite the ambition, because it's not like the Mill I remember, which sort of is interesting in as much as it leads me nicely into this sort of next little segment. Now, you heard at the end of that last bit of audio, as I was walking to Millwall, I said hello to somebody had come along beside me as I was walking down the road, and that was a guy named Dennis, and who's of a similar age to me, or a little bit older, I think, who's just trying to get to retirement, and he works for the City of London Corporation as like a housing manager, and he's been there for 30 odd years, you know. I've not quite got that amount of service in terms of goldsmiths, But we sort of come from that same tradition. And he mentioned the fact, he wasn't quite sure what I was doing with a microphone, and he asked me about the podcast. And then he said, funny enough, I was thinking about you the other day when I saw some stuff around Goldsmiths, you know, and this like debate about removing all of the like the statues from the front of like the Deptford Town Hall building, which we've just been moved into as a project in terms of open book, and the college is sort of carrying out like a survey into whether or not the statues should be removed. And I think the statues are Lord Nelson, Sir Walter Riley, a commander that served under Nelson, and like this unknown sailor or seafarer. And there's this debate going on, which has been prompted by the sort of Black Lives Matter movement, as to whether they should be taken down. So it's brought Goldsmiths into the spotlight in the same way as like the University of Sussex at the moment is in the spotlight over like the trans issues and arguments. All of it in some respects sort of navel gazing. It's almost like this like giant vanity project, you know, which most ordinary people don't have the luxury or the time to worry about. He was just really sort of bemoaning the fact that how that the job and the corporation that he's worked for more than 30 years has sort of changed beyond recognition. And we're in this, you know, post-millennial world, which for most of us of a certain vintage is completely perplexing. I mean, I've said it often enough that some days I'm just as perplexed as my dad is in terms of like the modern world, you know, and modern language and some of the problems of the modern world. And he was again like bemoaning the fact that when he first went to work for the City of London Corporation, it was just full of working class people, you know, and over time they've all been eradicated. And the City of London Corporation, a bit like Goldsmiths, now ultimately only take graduates on, because it's based on your degree rather than your streetwise knowledge, you know. And it's a similar problem for me and others like me in Goldsmiths, in terms of, you know, the hiring and firing policy, where, you know, I've often talked about this. All of those jobs that were traditionally carried out by people from working class backgrounds, you know, from the porters and the cleaners and the security, through to all of those people that worked behind the scenes in the offices, in the main, they were really like working class women who were coming back into the workforce after having children. You know, their kids were grown up and they were returning to work, all in these like secretaries roles and administrator roles, in that like old tradition, in the same way as my, you know, my mum went back to work, and she went to work for the print union, SOGAT 82, and that SOGAT before that. And that now just doesn't happen because they take on graduates, and so you've got this, there's no sort of like real continuity to it. And I think we were talking about the fact that when he first went to the City of London Corporation, certainly when I first went to Goldsmiths, it was like a different time. Even though I'm sort of coming in like a decade later, and things were, you know, most definitely changing, but it still had that sense of, you know, like the old GLC. And Goldsmiths certainly seemed like a, you know, an old ILEA institution, ILEA, the Inner London Educational Authority. It still seemed to have that feel and atmosphere about it. Although I think Goldsmiths had just sort of stopped doing evening classes then. And I think it was around about that same time that evening classes were sort of biting the dust, and the government were coming up with these sort of weird plans for these, you know, everything had to be a qualification, everything had to be about academic progression rather than about, you know, education for education's sake and everything that went with that, including like the social aspects of going to evening classes. And, you know, I've said often that my mum, she was a big fan of the evening classes, adult education. You know, they came out of that tradition of like the Workers' Education Association. And so she always went to evening classes. And as I keep arguing, if you went and did upholstery, as my mum did, and flower arranging and needlework or woodwork, at the end of the term, you didn't walk away with a qualification. You walked away with something that was real and tangible. So, for example, if you went to evening, you might have come away with a table lamp that you've made yourself. Or, like in my mum's case, you know, she might come away with like a dress that she'd made for herself during those evening class sessions. And they, in many ways, were far more valid than a certificate that you put in a cheap frame, you know. I certainly know that, you know, like my dad's got, still got this chair that, this sort of like bucket chair that she upholstered during one of those like evening class sessions. And it's like real like craftsmanship, you know. And that's better than any certificate. And I know when my mother died and my dad, who was obviously lonely and struggling with his own company, he joined, you know, we said to him, oh, like, you know, why don't you go to evening classes or something? And he, I think he went and did this sort of like, you know, computing course and took Spanish lessons. And I think, you know, whether he enjoyed it or not, I think he enjoyed the company, because I think what happened was that he ended up meeting lots of guys who seemed to be in a similar position to him. And women, you know, widows and widowers, all on their own, all at a loose end. And they were more there for the company than wanting to be Stephen Hawking, you know. And were at the Spanish lessons for the company rather than wanting to be Plácido Domingo. And what happened at the end of it, like, they, you know, they had to take these tests. And of course you had to pass the test and then progress. And he just said, you know, was there any way I could just redo the course again? Because he said, I'm not really interested in a qualification. And they just said, no, it doesn't work like that. You have to progress to a new class. And he said, but I don't really want to progress. I just want to be in the room with other people, I think. You know, it was really sad, I thought. So, but Goldsmith was certainly like that when I first went there. And there was, they still had like the PACE courses. Now, PACE were, it was like a department in Goldsmiths that did a similar sort of thing, maybe on a more structured level than the evening classes. And they were just like really short part-time courses. You know, they did them on an evening or on Saturday mornings. And you got a qualification. But you could use the units to build towards a degree, you know. It might take you 30 years, but even so, there were elements of it. So, in effect, you were doing a term the same way as like a traditional student would do a term. And you'd get sort of graded accordingly, and you had to build up grades, you know. Very much like the old, or the, you know, the American college system, where you just keep getting grades and building up your scores and your points towards your final degree. But you're doing it at your own pace and in subjects that you want to do, you know, rather than doing, concentrating on one subject, you could do a host of different subjects over the years. And so there was still that there. But what I think what was most important was, or more important than all of that, was there was like a sense of like belonging and community. That same sense of belonging and community that I remember from childhood in terms of the family and the places we lived. And that same sense of community, which I found in the print, and belonging and identity, which has gone now, you know, and it was interesting. I mean, you know, Goldsmiths was this like shambolic, ramshackle place that weirdly, for all its flaws, everybody loved, and everybody sort of loved working there. And, you know, it was always said, if you come to Goldsmiths, you'll stay for a year or you'll stay forever. And, you know, I went there and quickly fell into that pattern. I think, I just really want to be here forever, you know. Steady job, not too taxing in terms of the work. People that, you know, the people that I met, I liked. It was like a big drinking culture in the same way as the print. You know, you had these like legendary like tutors and lecturers who were, you know, like borderline alcoholics or full on alcoholics, meeting in the pubs, you know. But what was interesting then was that the lecturers, they not truly mingled with the rest of us. So you would get these like lecturers, you know, out on a Friday night with the porters and the guys from the post room and the secretaries all drinking in the pubs around New Cross. You know, I ran the staff football team when I first went to Goldsmiths, and that was sort of made up of lecturers and some porters and some like office staff, you know, people from personnel and different departments, you know. And it was great, it was really great. And we used to have a laugh, you know. We was never going to win a European Cup, but there was a sense of camaraderie, and we'd all go for a drink, you know. We'd play these matches against other universities and then we'd all go on a piss, you know. And it was great, it was really, you did really feel that there was like a true like sense of belonging. And that has completely gone now, because I mean, I've always described them as like this like new breed of people that works at Goldsmiths as being like the happy clappy brigade, you know. They're like the Facebook generation who they've conned themselves into thinking that work isn't work, it's actually part of your social life. You know, I've never been that naive. I've always been able to separate the two. But at the same time, that's not to say that I didn't like to go out and have a drink with the people I worked with, you know. But I could also separate the two. So once I went home, I didn't have any contact with anybody from work until I went back to work. That's just the way it was, you know. Whereas now it seems to be the whole thing is, it's almost like incestuous. And I just find the whole concept very strange, you know. And I think as well, it's very like one-dimensional now, because everybody's the same, which is very strange. I mean, you know, I assume like the whole point of university and going to university is to meet a wide range of people that are not from your street, you know, people from all around the world. I mean, you know, I certainly had that experience in terms of when I did my degree, that I formed relationships with people who under the normal circumstances I would have never even met and probably never liked upon first meeting. But, I did forge relationships, you know, I grudgingly accept I forged relationships, and I fold my hands up to that fact with people that from completely different backgrounds from mine. And I met people from America and Canada and Japan, who still sort of keep in touch with me, which is great. It's really great. It was a really great experience. But now it seems to me, even though everybody's from different parts of the world and they've come from different towns and villages within the UK and across Europe, they're almost like all the same. They're almost like cloned, you know. And what's happening, because of the policy, like the employment policy of Goldsmiths, people are graduating and then immediately going into work within the college. So there's this like continuation of these clones in effect. And of course, you know, some of the employment policies around, you know, 6 months and 1 year and 2 year contracts also means that nobody ever builds up any service. And so the staff is constantly changing and nobody ever gets their feet under the table. So what happens, and what's happened certainly in the last 10 years, is that all of the people I ever knew in Goldsmiths have gone, because everybody knew me, because I was I was lazy. I was always walking away from my desk. I was always walking around the college, you know. Everyone used to laugh, you know, and there goes Neil, he's going walkabout, you know. And I used to say it as like a running joke, I'm just going walkabout, you know. And my boss, who's like this working class woman, like a really fierce working class woman, my original boss, she was always, and she'd call out to me, Neil, when you're going walkabout, let me know. So you can take this letter with you, or can you go and deliver this thing? And she didn't care. It was like, because the reality was like, and she would defend me to the hilt and really fierce. You know, he does his work. There's never any complaint, you know, about his work. He's really helpful and friendly. All those, you know, I'm a charmer. Let's be honest. But then I was also willing to go that extra mile. Always volunteered, you know. Used to do like weekend work for nothing, you know. Which is sort of alien to me, working for nothing. But you know that whole thing about, you know, you can't do enough for a good boss, you know. And it was just different then. But now, you know, I walk around and every now and then, like you meet somebody, and it's like you're meeting somebody from the past, and, you know, the first thing you say is like, I thought you left, or I thought you, you know, in my case, I thought you was dead. Because you just don't really see anybody. And I think as well, because it's like that, you don't really go anywhere seeking people out. I mean, like part of that has come about because I joined Open Book and they were like a pretty like insular bunch. They definitely had like a bunker mentality. It was like us against the world. And so you spend far more time with them than you do anybody else, you know. But I always attempted maintaining like my connections with like the outside of Open Book and people that I worked with in the past, you know, just to maintain that like network, you know. And of course it's nice, you know, the reality is that, you know, the people I worked with, none of them drank for obvious reasons. And, you know, I've laughed about it. It's nice sometimes to just slip away to have a Guinness with a load of reprobates, you know, to let me air down a little bit. So, yeah, so we had an interesting conversation, you know, and we talked about Brexit and we talked about the Labour Party and we talked about what it is to be, like, English and, you know, definitely what it's about to be working class. And I'm not sure that we came away having solved any of the problems. I'm not sure we came away from that conversation any happier. I mean, we certainly weren't any happier 30 minutes later when the Millwall match kicked off, because that was like painful to watch. But in some ways, it was comforting. I think comforting for him, the guy I was talking to, because of the fact that it was, I think it was just sort of comforting to know that, you know, other people like feel your pain and know what it is that you're frustrated about, you know. And I think it's a really, I think it's like a really sad indictment on society in terms of all of us just can't wait to get to retirement. You know, we just can't wait to wish the remaining years of our working lives away. And that's, although, you know, let's be honest, I've wanted to retire since I was 16. But yeah, it's a sad way to end your life, you know, and I think especially like the end of your working life, but especially in terms of the fact that just because I can't take this shit anymore in work, you know, which is, yeah, I think it's sort of a sad indictment. So I've just reached home now and Travis is circling the bowl rather than circling the wagon. So I'm just going to feed him and I'll give you more in a little while. Cheers. Okay, so I'm just on my way now, Sunday lunchtime, up to the Long Pond, where everybody calls me Brad. So I'm looking forward to a nice Sunday lunchtime session. Unlike the Sunday lunchtime sessions of working class past, I have to say, because I am sort of aware on a podcast that is dedicated to working class life, art, politics and culture, that those Sunday lunchtime sessions for some people always ended in misery. People coming home drunk, upsetting the dinner table, or not coming home at all. And I'm sort of painfully aware of that fact, but some experience of that myself in my own family. And I certainly know my research assistant had experience of that in her family. So we're always at pains to have a nice pleasant Sunday lunchtime session, but with imposed limits. I mean, I've often said about myself, I've never really been an aggressive drunk. Not to say that I've ever really been a drunk, but I've always been one of those who has a drink and gets quite giggly and comical. I don't want to take on the world or have a fight with anybody. And then I normally reach my limit, put my coat on, and give it an Irish goodbye, which normally means you just slip out the door without saying goodbye to anybody and go straight home and go to bed. So there'll be none of that today. I'll be shaking hands and kissing babies and standing at the door telling everybody I love you all and blowing everyone a big kiss. Now, I was talking in the last segment about speaking to a guy, you know, and our experiences of work past and work now in the same jobs, and you know, the great changes that I made. Now, when I was at Mill yesterday, someone tapped me on the shoulder, and it was a friend of ours who I haven't seen for a while, and he works in the world of publishing, or has always worked in the world of publishing, and he worked for Penguin Books and then his other publishing company. Now, he's just told me that he's finally took the plunge and is starting up his own publishing company dedicated to working class writers. So I'll bring you more news of that as and when I get it, and who knows, somewhere down the line you might be reading one of his that is actually one of mine. So fingers crossed. I'm nearly at the pub now, so I think I'm going to leave it there for another week of the Likes of Us podcast. I know it's only a short one, this one, but I hope you get the flavour of it, the flavour of the tone of my voice, because I still think I'm making some important gripes rather than points. So yeah, as I say, I'm going to leave it there for this week. I'll speak to you all next week, hopefully on a Thursday. But again, don't hold your breath. But in the meantime, think of us. Think of the likes of us. And up the good old British worker. Cheers.
Now that you've found your paradise, this is your kingdom to command. You can go outside and polish your car, or sit by the fire in your Shangri-La. Here's your reward for working so hard. Gone are the lavatories in the backyard. Gone are the days when you dreamed of that car. You just want to sit in your Shangri-La. Your slippers and sit by the fire. You've reached your top and you just can't get any higher. You're in your place and you know where you are, in your Shangri-La. Sit back in your old rocking chair. You need not worry, you need not care. You can't go anywhere. 7 shillings a week.